Hello and welcome to another edition of Heart of Healthcare. My name is Dr. Jan Bonhoeffer, and these podcasts are about helping physicians restore balance in their lives so we can co-create a medical system that benefits everyone. A quick reminder that you can find more information about our nonprofit, Heart-Based Medicine, and the work we do to support healthcare professionals at heartbasedmedicine.org.
Hello and welcome to the Heart of Healthcare podcast, Series 2, Episode 3, when we hear from Dr. Deirdre Little talking about pioneering healthcare in rural Australia.
All right, welcome. This is Jan Bonhoeffer, and I'm welcoming you to another episode of the Heart of Healthcare podcast. Dr. Dan Dinnenberg back at the show, co-host of this show from another side of the blue planet, calling from Kauai.
Thank you, Jan. It's a pleasure to be here.
And today we have a very special guest with us from all around the world. We have Dr. Deirdre Little with us. Dr. Deirdre Little has created a not-for-profit antenatal clinic which supports pregnant mothers from start to finish with paid specialist, allied health referrals, and multifaceted practical, social, and emotional support through pregnancy. Her clinic sees illegal immigrants and migrant workers who have no health entitlements. So welcome, Deirdre Little.
Thank you. Thank you, Jen. It's good to be here.
Let's get right into this. You're running a really, really busy clinic, and we are in the midst of COVID. There's a lockdown situation in your area right now, so we'll keep it really brief. But we want to, I would really like to ask you a few questions because the work that you're doing is really seminal for heart-based medicine and is in many ways exemplary for what I would love to see as a model for the future of medicine. And in many ways, you actually are a pioneer for an alternative approach to healthcare. You have a huge heart, a humble approach, and you have stepped up to meet the needs of the most vulnerable people in your community, migrant workers. So, Deirdre, could you share with us a little on what you have been doing in Australia?
Okay, well, the story really began about 7 years ago when myself and some colleagues and some nursing staff, medical colleagues and nursing staff, just were discussing the model of care that we were working in the hospital situation and also in our private general practice family clinics. And we were sort of aware that as the years had gone by, many years in medicine, we were aware that we'd sort of drifted a little bit away from what I suppose ideally we had all hoped to use our skills for when we entered medicine. I think that's common to a lot of us. You know, in a sense, we all have a vocation, and hopefully that, you know, from the Latin word, it's a calling out. Vocations are calling out. So hopefully that calling out is inspired by our particular skill set. And so for many of us in medicine, whether we're sort of humanities-based people or whether we're science sort of based people, we still have that sort of core or that kernel, which is what led us into medicine in the first place. And the current model that we were working under in the hospital in Australia and in our family practice clinics in Australia was just becoming, you know, a bit skewed, and we all practice evidence-based medicine. So it's like sort of Venn diagrams. You've got evidence-based medicine, you've got the business sort of circle, if you like, or balloon overlapping that. And under and overlapping all both of them, you've got the desire to heal. And it's a genuine thing. I don't think you'd be hard-pressed, I think, to find a doctor or a nurse who doesn't have that kernel desire to contribute to healing, to have a healing effect. And I think that's, you know, the heart of our vocation. But that model is sort of skewed a little bit, and it's just become that way for a lot of reasons. And that skewing, unfortunately, tends to leave behind sections of the community that are perhaps needing more of the of the healing focus rather than the business focus, or rather than just purely the nuts and bolts of evidence-based medicine, although we must never leave evidence-based medicine behind. At the same time, we have to keep a balance in how we approach our patients. So my own particular field is really gynecology and obstetrics. So I delivered intrapartum obstetrics, delivered babies at our hospital for 30 or so years, same hospital, same town, lived there a long time. And we noticed over the years how things were changing. So there were groups of people who were, for one reason or another, becoming alienated from the system. And at the same time, there are these principles in business which say that if your business isn't growing, it's dying. I don't understand necessarily the economics behind that, but I know that business people do. And the business balloon has issues of time constraints and efficiency, a sort of industrial level of efficiency in how you spend your time. And, you know, the environment that you work in has to contribute to that by being easy to maintain, you know, flow of people, shiny sort of surfaces and stuff. And the processing of people has to be efficient too. So people within those three overlapping balloons get processed through the business model, through evidence-based medicine, and hopefully sort of healing comes out the other side. But for a lot of pregnancies, and we really look at all things to do with pregnancy. So we look at pregnancy, women who are pregnant from start to end. We also help women who are trying to conceive and women who may be grieving the loss, miscarriage or whatever of a previous pregnancy. And so we decided to set up a service that would be just dealing with the needs of these people. So none of us, we could all donate a day of our time. And so the service was set up with no one drawing a wage. And the way the health system is in Australia is that for clients that we see, there's a Medicare rebate that comes into the clinic. So that goes into a kitty for our patients. So the nurse, the midwife, the ancillary staff, the doctor, no one draws a wage. And so the Medicare kitty, if you like, sort of builds up into a lovely freedom for us to exercise to help our patients. So we're able to use that money, and over 7 years it's become quite a reasonable sum. So I suppose it's worth, sounds a bit crass to mention money, but at any given time we've usually got about $20,000 Australian in that, $10,000 American. And that sort of gets added to, and then we'll have some expenses. For a pregnancy in Australia where the fruit pick is, it's a lot of blueberry picking around our area, and also there's some cotton farms out west. We get clients coming from 3 hours, 4 hours away in New South Wales into our clinic. The cost for them to attend a hospital to get care for their pregnancy is about $25,000 Australian. And if the baby gets sick, that's in neonatal intensive care, or special care nursery, or if the mother needs a Caesar, or some procedural interventions, of course the cost just escalates. And so it was a time of great distress for these people when they fell pregnant and were making decisions about what to do. So we looked to see in the beginning, 7 years ago, how we could help those people. And we opened a space, and we were donated the use of a house when people heard what we were trying to set up. They rallied around us. So we were given the use of a house for 1 day a week, and it's got a beautiful setup. There's my clinic with an ultrasound. We've got a nurse's room or a settling room when patients come in. They're given offered a cup of tea and something to eat. They'll talk to the nurses, a bit of a chat, and then the nurse will direct the direction of what happens after that. In terms of whether they have a blood pressure check or a urine check or whatever, or whether it's counselling. And we offer them as much time as they need. So there's no time limits. Although we do take a few bookings, we have walk-ins. We're open to walk-ins. And we just stay all day seeing all comers until the last person, you know, has left the building. So everyone gets a hearing. And people understand that sometimes there'll be a little bit of a wait. if someone needs more time, we give it to them. So we try to make the environment as welcoming as possible. So someone, it's usually about five of us there on any given shift, and we'll have brought in, someone brings in flowers from the garden. We have people bringing in food. Our past clients will often, they're often different ethnicities and migrant workers, so they'll drop in Afghan food or whatever it might be. So we have food for all comers. We've furnished it fairly softly. We have pictures on the walls that actually, again, that our clients have actually painted, so we've actually hung them on the walls. And the people that work there tend to be fairly warm people, and there is a certain sort of psycho-spiritual element to the nature of the people, if you like, who are drawn to work there. In addition to that, because we're in a rural area, doctors in Australia usually have a fairly broad kind of skill set. So I've done accident emergency for many years and obstetrics, obviously, as well as general practice training. So because of that broad skill set, it's a bit of a gift in many ways. It means that we're kind of not super specialised, but our knowledge skills are enough to sort of manage most problems that will kind of walk through the door. And we have a sense of safety. So that's sort of how we operate. But, yeah, what we found is that the people that we refer to, dentists and obviously pharmacists, and physiotherapists and psychologists and psychiatrists sometimes. And what we found is that because they appreciate our ethos and what we're doing, they change a little bit too. So they'll often offer their services at a very much reduced rate for us, which is good. We have the chemist offering things at cost price. We have the dentists offering a reduced rate. So it sort of permeates the community as we go along. We've got the school kids in the local primary school knit for us at lunchtime. They knit little squares, actually morning tea time. They knit little squares, and the librarian at the local school sews them together. And so, you know, we have a build-up of baby rugs, and various organisations knit, you know, baby clothes as well. So we have little bounty bags that we give each mother as she comes in. So that's how we've established it. Our purpose was to try to sort of create this space for growth, so to have time to listen to the people who come in. So the consult is structured a bit differently to our other consults that I do in my rooms, not necessarily in the hospital, although, again, it's starting to permeate out in all directions. But the first question is, well, how did you come today? How did you travel? How did you arrive today?
Deirdre, just before you go into this, let me just ask you a few catch-up questions here.
So
this has been a lot of information, and it's utterly amazing what you're building and what you've done and how you describe it. It's just wonderful. It is just heartwarming and truthful, and, you know, there's no... It's just so clear that this is real life on the ground, and that what you're living is actually livable. You know, this is no woo-woo, we love each other and forget about the rest. I love your Venn diagram. I love your idea that there's evidence-based medicine, there's complementary, alternative, expanding parts of health care that we actually do need if we want to deliver the care that you're describing is at the overlap in this Venn diagram, where it's really about the desire to heal and have a healing impact. I really love that, love this Venn diagram idea. And let's just understand for those of us who are not in Australia, you mentioned that one of the key elements is Medicare. Mm-hmm. And that this is actually helping the clinic to run. And this, you highlighted one of the challenges that you're facing is the financial constraints. And so tell us a little bit more about what you mean by Medicaid support, and what does that look like for those who are not aware of it?
Okay. For Australian citizens, and for some residents in Australia who may not be citizens, there is a Medicare health entitlement, which means that for medical services the government will reimburse the practitioner for a predefined amount for that particular service, whatever it may be. There are item numbers and they carry a particular reimbursement. Now, that reimbursement is not huge, and some general practices find they need to actually charge patients a fee rather than just relying on the Medicare reimbursement.
So this is a public, it's a national fund that is made available. So what I understand is that in your area, at least, there's both available. There's a public health system and a private healthcare system.
Yes.
And they both interact. And in your clinics, you manage to bring the public and the private healthcare to work together well.
That is what we do. Yes. We don't, of course, get any Medicare entitlement for the migrant fruit pickers, for the people on student visas, for those illegal immigrants, and a few of those. Of course, there's no Medicare entitlement for them. They're not registered to receive it. So that means we don't receive any reimbursement for providers.
What do you do for those? So what do you do for the migrant workers and for those who do not have public health entitlement? And obviously they cannot afford $25,000 for a delivery.
Yeah. Okay, so we treat them exactly the same as we do every other client, completely impartial, compassionate, reassuring. So that's our ethos towards them, no difference. We reassure them, don't worry, let's just look after the pregnancy and we'll worry about the bills. We'll worry about the bills ourselves at this end. So what we do as we go through the pregnancy, we have enough money in our kitty, if you like, to pay for their blood tests, their formal ultrasounds, anything that may be needed, including consults. So that's the antenatal care. But, of course, at some point they're going to be delivering and we want them to deliver in a hospital. We want them to have that standard of care. So we usually, and so far, we've had enough money to provide that. This year, as I mentioned, we're getting a lot of community support. So this year we had one donation of $50,000. And another one of $5,000, that's just this year. So that's Australian, so you have to halve that to understand what that is in American dollars. And what we also do is we go and talk to the local member of parliament. We get the patient's permission and we go and talk to that local member. And we'll say, look, living in and working and picking our fruit and helping our primary industries, we have this woman who is pregnant and she wants to have her baby in a hospital in your electorate, and we're providing all the financial support that's needed antenatally to get her to that hospital with a safe pregnancy on board so that she's been cared for in the months leading up to this. We're asking now if you can waive the cost in the public hospital that this woman will meet. Now, so far, we've been successful in that. So far, we've been educating our politicians. The hospital does present them with a bill, but we've been able to either offset it or to get our local member, convince our local member to rise to the occasion of talking to the director of clinical services at the hospital. So there's a bit of negotiation goes on in the background, but so far we've managed to get them through that so that they don't end up with a huge bill at the end that they are completely unable to pay and that could lead them into a serious debt situation where they don't have the money to pay it and they could be, you know, penalised for not meeting their debts. So far we've managed to get them through it by a combination of paying the antenatal fees, convincing the local MP, Member of Parliament, to speak to the hospital, and to get them through in that regard. We've also managed to fly one down to Melbourne for the care that she needed that had to be provided, and that was paid for by a pregnancy agency. So we link in with a lot of pregnancy support groups too, and they are also keen to rise to the occasion. But mostly we don't have to draw on them or to ask them. Mostly we're able to find a way through just through negotiation. And we've gradually, I think, gained the respect in the community too, that now when someone mentions Lily Rose, people know who we are.
Amazing. That is amazing. So you actually have three offices here. One is your obstetrics and gynecology service, your clinic.
Yes.
Another one is a financial department negotiating with partners.
Yes.
And the third one is a political lobbying office.
Well, you could call it that, but we try to leave politics at the door. You could call it that, but we try very hard to be apolitical. We don't want to have that sort of baggage attached to us if we can. We try very hard to be apolitical, leave politics at the door. But that doesn't mean we won't go and talk to our local member, whatever his politics may be. And, of course, we change every 3 years, tend to change. So, yeah.
It is such an important example of how community values. So actually the center of the Venn diagram, the desire to heal, is actually not unique to the healthcare professionals. But actually, when you talk to politicians, when you talk to donors, when you talk to community leaders, that there is actually support. And there is a sense of what you describe. For example, here are workers coming in from the outside. They help us with our economy. They help us with our local economy. And so actually, it is our role and responsibility to take care of those. And that's beautiful. So you're just communicating very strongly what are your values, and you're making a plea to those values in other members of the community, and that finds resonance. Yeah. And that is really amazing.
It does. Yeah.
That is really amazing. Can you tell us a little bit about the impact that your clinic actually has? This is a comparatively small clinic, but it seems to me, from what I hear, is that it is an absolutely highly respected and valued clinic in your region and area.
Yes, I think it has an impact in both ways. It has an impact on us who work there, and it also has an impact on the clients, and I think on the migrant community. We get a lot of feedback that it's word of mouth, so we don't actually advertise anymore. It's our clients tend to come in word of mouth, and we get referrals, obviously, from different formal sources. But it has an impact that they feel, they know that they're going to be safe when they walk in. They know they're going to be valued and respected. They know that nothing they say, and we get some young, a lot of young girls coming in too, and older women who are pregnant who are nervous about it. But they know that once they come in from word of mouth as well, that they'll be their truth will be respected, their story will be listened to, they'll be heard. And whatever we can do to nurture them in that pregnancy or in their quest for a pregnancy, if infertility is the problem, whatever can be done, we will do. We will go as far as we can to help them. And sometimes that means, because of various situations, it means we go to court with them, and we will sit with them in labour. When they have hyperemesis, we'll be the drip. Get to stay with the mother, have a drip put up. So it has that impact of they feel safe and they feel cared for, they feel loved, they feel respected. I think that's a good place of growth for anyone. But for ourselves also, it seems to restore a bit of balance in our lives so that we don't feel that we're betraying our core values, if you like, by working in other systems. And, for example, on a Tuesday I work at this clinic. On a Wednesday I do a 24-hour shift at the local hospital. But I find that the rejuvenation, if you like, or the encounter of working on the Tuesday, that lovely sort of ability to practice heart-to-heart medicine, to work out what can we do to help this person, not to feel helpless, but to have resources and funds and a referral network to draw on, you can actually feel you can achieve something. You don't leave the clinic feeling, oh, I hope that went okay. I hope they got some benefit. You know that you've steered things in a positive direction. The next day when I work at the hospital, because it's totally different, you're in a different mode, and yet I find that I'm carrying some of that Tuesday attitude into my Wednesday work, into the hospital work. And so the nurses will talk about it, they know about it, they ask about how it went. And so there's a lot more, sort of, if you like, it translates into that there's a lot more, I think, community concern that's creeping into the hospital setting because of just spin-offs over the many years from having this clinic in the area, it just seems to soften the edge of medicine. They know this can be done, it's happening, it's working. It's a thing, that, an idea. It's an idea that people take on board, that they become conscious of. And I've noticed lots of little things at the hospital. There's lots of little like knitted toys and things suddenly appearing and being given out to the kids. There's a bubble blowing machine in accident and emergencies, so we blow bubbles for the kids. That wasn't there before in a sort of regular sense. So I think it has a general softening and impact on the caregivers and on the people we care.
Beautiful. Thank you. I think you're making a couple of really important points here. So one is that if you're creating an environment for yourself where you feel you can live and act as an authentic health worker, you can actually deliver the care that you are called to deliver. At the end of an incredibly busy day, including financial uncertainties, including health risks and financial risks, you actually feel nourished yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And when you deliver this care from this perspective, in this state, from this taking this stance, the patients feel seen and heard. And so they actually recommend word of mouth to actually come to you. And there's no PR needed. There's no advertisement needed. People know that this is the place to be. This is where you will be taken care of. This is where there's human care. This is not roboted, automated, mind-created care, but really heartfelt care where people feel safe and at home. And that softens. And it's really interesting that you're saying this actually has a carryover effect. So it's not just kind of until you do fall into bed tired in the evening, which I bet it does still. there is something that just feels right. It feels fundamentally true and right. And that allows you to actually be and serve in environments that may feel less ideal.
There's truth in that.
Deirdre, Jan, there is truth in that. Thank you so much for everything that you've shared. I've been so inspired by your story, Deirdre, and have been quietly listening and taking it all in. But this feels like a very important point to highlight. Ultimately, what you're explaining is this carryover effect from living and acting as a healthcare worker. You're nourished on Tuesday and you take this with you on Wednesday. And I think this is a point that I want to elucidate, because that's what we're searching for. I feel like Jan and I and the journey and intention with heart-based medicine is find that magic spot. That spot that you mention in the center of your Venn diagram, the desire to heal. And that can carry over because that is nourishing. That is the creation of something that is regenerative healing for those of us that are called to this profession. And the impact that you explain is that it's for caregiver and care receiver. There's respect and there is love and is safe and there is balance. And the balance ultimately is the giving and receiving. And that is in the shared emotion of love of the heart. And I see that as such a fundamentally important place to spend time and energy. And so I just want to stop you for a moment and to think about that. To think about how we could find our meaning and purpose, and more people like you that don't know how they're going to do that. And they just start. They start and they create an environment where they can live and act and ultimately create safety and truth and respect and being nurtured. And when you do that as a physician, as a caregiver, as a part of this health team, you feel needed. And when you feel needed, you feel a certain resilience. That's at least my experience, is it's a little bit creative because you don't know how you're going to get there, and you're sharing and you're in it. You're in that flow of life, of giving, of thinking, of planning, of what you would call that gift of warmth and compassion. And so ultimately you're expanding that within this Tuesday, and it carries over to Wednesday. And I love the idea of that. I love the idea of that enough to think about what we all within healthcare should be doing in our lives to create that nourishing feel, to deep dive into our meaning and our purpose, and to give. Because ultimately, we are all in this to be of service, and to be of service allows us to grow. And to grow is to become more resilient and to act from this place of heart. And that's what I want to share in my own life as I'm spending time with patients, clients, and connecting into our communities, what is necessary to bring heart into medicine. And that's the importance of what you're sharing. And I love the story, and I love the narrative of how you bring that to life, because ultimately, to me, you're leading with heart. You're modeling heart. And from word of mouth, people know that. And so then it becomes a temple of safety, a temple of respect, and a temple where people will get great health care. And that regenerative model is something that I would love to see how we could articulate and scale and bring forth into the world, because the way that I think of this, the more heart, the more resilient, the more excitement within medicine, and then we're combating all of the things that we're seeing right now, the pandemic of fear and the burnout and the healthcare workers that are just not doing what they want to be doing. They feel like cogs in the machine. And what you're explaining here, Deirdre, is an antidote that taps deeper into our heart space to share what we all love and the reason that we're doing this work.
And one of the other doctors is actually, I suppose I'm the main doctor who works there, but there are two others that help out if I can't get there or if I'm sick or out of the country or something. And one of them commented that it was the highlight of his week. And he's a chap with a PhD. He also lectures at the university in Armidale nearby. He said it was the highlight of his week. And I've sort of always remembered him saying that, because I had to think about it. It is the highlight of my week. And over the years, yeah, it's become the highlight of my week as well.
Deirdre, looking into the future, how might this pioneering approach impact positively on a model of future healthcare? And maybe what advice would you offer other rural community-based clinics and organizations?
I would say the formula works. We did a lot of planning before we opened up. We've got to maintain standards. There's no reason that you would ever depart from good medical standards and evidence-based medicine. You don't need to. You can do all this within the framework of a softer environment for medicine. So the formula, I think, works is who can give their time, who has the ability, and usually that will then bring out the gifts of warmth and compassion in that person. I think we all grow in that space. And so I see that as the future of it, a formula that works that could be expanded into other areas of medicine as well, into the whole of general practice, rather than just focusing on a pregnancy, infertility and grief service. I think it could be expanded into other areas. I think it's just a question of just biting the bullet and saying, look, let's give it a shot. Let's try.
Wonderful. Thank you for these really encouraging words and your inspiring stories. I know that in Switzerland, as a comparably affluent country, there's a big issue to actually provide rural community-based services and clinics, as there's not a lot of incentive for healthcare professionals to work there. And we all know that this is a phenomenon that is pretty much universal. It's a global issue in almost all countries. Mm-hmm. You're describing a place where everybody would like to work, I guess, as a healthcare professional. So how could people get in touch with you?
Okay.
If they had questions and ask you for advice.
Yeah. Look, I'm happy to have you give out my email address. We have a 24/7 phone number at Lily Rose, but sometimes it's hard. I think internationally people find it hard sometimes to access an Australian number. I'm not quite sure why that is. But certainly my email address, which you have, I'm very happy for you to give that out, and I'm very happy to answer and field any questions or inquiries to outline our model, to put you in touch with our nurse who runs the practice. Our practice manager is actually a nurse and a midwife. Put you in touch with her. And we also have the services of an accountant, which is also given pro bono. And and I should have mentioned, we also link in with pro bono lawyers in Melbourne to help with the status of the child, so that the child not to be stateless. A big thing, but another topic, perhaps another conversation. But we have, lots of pro bono services, but I can help explain how we established all of that with email contact would be great.
Fantastic. And let me ask you maybe one more question here. So what encouragement to other like-minded, like-hearted healthcare professionals would you have?
All right. Look, the encouragement I would give would be, it's not hard to set up. It's not hard to set up. We all know people who know people. We all have a place in our community as doctors. We're usually fairly well known. You'd be surprised how many people would support you once that little kernel of an idea is kicked off. You'd be surprised the doors that open and the people that say, I like the sound of that. What can we do? Encouragement, definitely. Bite the bullet. Just begin. Begin. It's not as difficult as it may sound. Things just come from all different resources. They appear. Our ultrasound machine was given us by a local specialist. It's a brand new one. Then we got given another one. We have two. That sort of thing. So I would say begin, plan and begin. And get some help so that you're telling the people who've done it before, just to shortcut it for you so that you haven't got to reinvent the wheel. But, yeah, all encouragement. It's a great place to work, the great environment.
So valuable, so valuable. There is a I'm just particularly touched by what you're saying because there is, as you know, there's a global pandemic of healthcare professionals running into burnout. And we know that one of the key features of burnout in healthcare professionals is actually that they're feeling a sense of not being valuable enough, not being valued for their work, not being good enough, a sense of insufficiency. And what you're describing here is actually, surprised. You might be surprised how many people know about you and actually do value what you do. And there might be more out there than it seems. That to me might be one of the most important encouragements to healthcare professionals around the world right now. And to actually let go of the idea that I am the healthcare professional, I need to have the answers and solutions, the patients are the carrier of the problem, but actually see yourself as a community connector, as somebody who can actually leverage forces to work together and support, not only for what you care for as a healthcare professional, including yourself, but also for the services that you provide. And then the entire community is benefiting from, if you like, letting go the idea of that we're isolated and alone and kind of lonesome warriors here. So you're really demonstrating this very beautifully. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. This is really, really valuable. So
thanks, Sam. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. So I hope everybody, you enjoyed this show. What an inspiring moment with Dr. Deirdre Little joining us from Australia. And if you enjoy this show and you want to connect with us, please, wherever you are and whatever platform you listen to, follow this podcast and join us on heartbasedmedicine.org to create the future of medicine as we would all like to see it, with the passion and care that we all want to feel when we are at work, feeling energized and leaving our workplaces ready for the next day and for our families. Thank you so much for joining.